Well, today, I find myself very, very grateful to be back with you guys teaching. Every August, just about, I take off from teaching so that I can just spend some more focused time and energy on, the leadership issues in our community and strategizing and listening and planning for what's ahead for us. And so it's been a really, really good season. For me, and so excited about what God's doing in our church, but it's also really good to be back up here with you and teaching. And so what we've been doing the last several weeks is Steve has started and done an awesome job on this series called Decalogue. And what we're doing is we're exploring and kind of walking through the Ten Commandments. And one of the things that we wanted to make clear from the beginning is that the Ten Commandments, as we explore these aren't laws that God is giving his people so that his people can somehow achieve access with him. That these Ten Commandments don't serve as some type of religious hoops that people have to jump through in order for them to establish some relationship with God. But rather, by giving the Ten Commandments, God is confirming his relationship with his people. He's confirming it. He's not establishing it. That's why God starts out in the very first commandment we looked at the first week, where he says, "I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of Egypt." Notice what he says there. He says, "I am the Lord, your God." He doesn't say, "I am the Lord, the God." He says, "I'm the Lord, your God." From the very beginning, God wants to make it clear that he implies relationship from the very beginning, so that it would be clear that these are not rules that his people have to obey to get God to love them. These aren't rules that you have to obey to somehow get God to be for you. God wants to make it clear, he already does. Already does. He says, "I am the Lord your God who rescued you out of Egypt. Before you did anything to earn it or deserve it, I initiated relationship with you. This is not something you have to do to earn my love or earn my approval." So he goes on to the second command where he says that, "Don't try to craft an image of me that makes me manageable for you somehow. That somehow makes me in your mind something you can control or manipulate." And he moves on to number three and he says, "Don't attach my name to things that aren't of me, that don't come from my heart, that aren't what I'm actually about. Don't misrepresent who I am in your actions and in your words." And then last week, we looked at the fourth command, which is that we would Sabbath, that we would rest, that we are commanded by God to stop working. And he says, this is how this interacts with me. It's because when you choose not to stop working, you live your life as though everything depends on you. And he says, this is such an important rhythm for you, for your health, for everyone's health in the world, that you stop, that you pause, and that you don't live like you're in control, that you recognize by stopping and by pausing that there is a God. There's a God who reigns. All of which brings us to the fifth commandment. And in the fifth commandment, there's a subtle shift that happens. And we've referenced that before. But the first four tend to focus on us honoring God. But the next six commandments in the ten, they tend to talk about how we honor other people. Things like how we honor their bodies, how we honor other people's marriages, how we honor their possessions. And while there is a shift that takes place between commandment four and five, understand that these two ideas, honoring God and honoring people, are inseparably linked. They're not two distinct ideas. When Jesus, in fact, later on in the New Testament, when he was asked, "What's the most important commandment in the law?" Jesus responds with, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." And then he says, "And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." He says the second is like it. These aren't two distinct ideas. This is one and the same. Loving God is loving people. And you can't hate people and love God. And so loving God, loving people are mystically tied together. When you learn to love and honor God, loving people is naturally going to begin to follow. But what's interesting is, out of all the relationships that God could have started with, of all the different relational dynamics to address first, God starts with this one, once that subtle shift takes place. Verse 12, "Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord, your God, is giving you." Now, there's a couple interesting things to note about this command up front. One, it's the only command out of the 10 that isn't defined in any way by what you shouldn't do. There are no thou shall nots included in command number 5. It's only defined positively by what actions you should take. 2, when this is the first commandment that's given and the only one out of the 10 that comes attached with a promise to it. Verse 12, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. So apparently God wants to make it clear how you treat your father and mother will influence how you treat everyone else. And not only that, it will directly impact the quality of the life that you experience and the quality of the life that you live. Now, a few months ago, Steve taught a message in our series, Housework, about honoring parents. If you weren't here or you need a refresher, you can find it on our website or you can find it on iTunes and the podcast. And the message is titled, Look Again. And in that message, Steve does a great job addressing some extremes that we can face in dealing with our parents, such as what role does honor play when your parents were or are abusive and toxic in many ways? He also spoke to those that may find themselves with this constant sense of general disappointment in their parents, always feeling let down and robbed of what you think your parents should be in your mind, and then what role honor plays in those particular situations. And so if you didn't hear that message, I'd highly encourage you to go back and listen to it. One, he does a great job unpacking a lot of that. But two, I'm not going to try and recap everything he went into just a few months ago, but instead what I want to do today is I want to try to build on that. And rather than try to address the extremes mostly, what I want to do is I want to live more in the middle. And I want to address some foundational principles about honor that not only speaks to how we honor our parents, but also addresses how we honor people in general. Because one, that's where we're going to be headed the next several weeks and looking at how do we treat other people. But two, it's because honor has become this lost art in our culture that we've forgotten how to honor well. And so we all need to be reminded, regardless, you know, of parent or child or any other relational dynamics, we have to learn to recapture this lost art of honor. So if you're taking notes, I want to walk you through a few principles. And the first principle is this: the level of honor you give is determined by the amount of value you perceive. Say that again. The level of honor that you give is determined by the amount of value you perceive. Now, just as a way to try to illustrate that to you, consider this notebook for a moment. There's lots of these around. You can pick them up at Barnes & Noble. You can pick them up at, you know, Amazon, Target, all these different kind of things. And so there's moleskins that kind of look like this. This one's an ecosystem book because it's easier to tear the pages out. I've probably filled about a dozen of these over the last couple years. I write rough drafts of messages in here. I keep notes and I coach baseball. We put all our lineups in here. I do all sorts of just thoughts and random things all in this book. Well, a few weekends ago, I had the opportunity to spend 2 days with a man named Dallas Willard. Now, for some of you, you recognize that name because you've heard me talk about him quite a bit. You've heard Steve talk about him in the past. But Dallas Willard is this brilliant author and philosopher and this incredible man of God. He still teaches full-time at the University of Southern California in their philosophy department. And his books, more than anything else outside of scriptures themselves, have shaped my understanding of Jesus and have shaped my understanding of his kingdom and what it means to follow him. And so he's in his late 70s now. And Dallas is always someone that I've wanted to meet. I've just wanted to spend some time with him. I've wanted to express my gratitude toward him of how he's mentored me from afar. I've wanted to have just a few moments to ask him some questions and just continue to learn from him and be around him. Now, for some of you, that's like, you know, Dallas Willard, that doesn't mean anything to you. And totally get that. But for you, maybe if you're a big basketball person, maybe it's, you know, it's like Jordan for you. Or maybe if you're into politics, to meet the president. Or maybe there was some other professor or novelist or author that's really impacted you, whoever it was. But Dallas Willard's kind of one of those for me. And so a couple weeks ago, I got that chance to spend a couple days with him. And at the end of those 2 days, I still felt like kind of all fanboy around him, you know, when I would see him. And I'd kind of stalk him, you know, a little bit and I'd get all nervous when I would talk to him. And so as we were kind of wrapping up the couple days, together, I was like, man, I'd love to have him sign something of mine. And, you know, he's an author, and usually authors sign their books, but I didn't have any of his books with me. And so, but what I had done is I had taken about 20 pages of notes in this notebook from stuff he had said and listened to him. And so I was like, hey, I'm just going to have him sign this. And so I go up to him, and I'm spending some more time talking with him just one-on-one in conversation. And we had a chance to do that a few times over the couple days. And I spent a lot of time telling him about you guys. And telling him about all of you and this mission that we feel like Jesus is calling us on to partner with him in the world. And he was so encouraging and just said some really great things and emphasized just the importance of where God has placed this community and the impact it can have on the world because of so many different factors that all converge here. And so then I just said, asked him, would you just sign my notebook for me? And so took his hand and kind of this gentle, shaky way, he writes out his name. He writes a few comments down for me. And then he says, I want to give you this one verse that I think really specifically speaks to you and to your mission and to what you're trying to accomplish and to kind of cast some vision for your life. And so he writes down this reference of this verse and closes the book, shakes my hand, puts his hand on my shoulder, and he walks away. And I was just like, oh, that was that moment, you know? It's one of these moments that you're like, oh, I just want to kind of freeze this because I've wanted that for so long. And so I want you to understand that to me, this isn't just any notebook. I've got tons of these types of notebooks, but this notebook, this one's different because of what's written in it, because of what he wrote and the personal nature that it is to me. It has tremendous, tremendous value to me. And so what I just described, for me personally, can you imagine me selling that to somebody for, oh, you know, $100? I mean, can you imagine me selling this notebook to somebody after all that I described to you for, you know, $1,000? Or can you imagine me selling this and the value that it has to me to someone, let's say $100,000? Yeah, probably. I mean, Dallas is cool and all, but I'd take a little bit of that money, fly out, track him down myself, and we can do this all over again. Here you go, all right? So I'm not naive or foolish. I'd take the 100 grand, just so you know. But here's the point of all of that, all right? The moment you first saw this notebook, from that first moment, nothing about this notebook has changed. The only thing that's changed is your perception of it. Your perception of what it means to me, the value that it has to me. The only thing that's changed is your perception of its value. And understand, when it comes to your parents, the same thing is true. The level of honor you give them is determined by the amount of value you perceive in them. That's all on you. You see, many times with our parents, no matter how young or old we are, one of the things we can neglect to realize is that each of our parents are sinners. They're sinners. We've all sinned. That we're raised by sinners. And not only that, but that our parents each have a story. They have a context that shaped them. They have circumstances that shaped them. They had parents, perhaps, that shaped them, good or bad. They had wounds that shaped them. Now, that doesn't excuse them from responsibility for their actions by any means, but it can be tempting for us to only see our parents through the lens of our relationship with them. This one relationship in their life, and that's all that we view them through, rather than as people who are impacted by all sorts of other relationships in their life, in the past, at work, in different environments where they're at, other relationships that they have. And very often we don't see our parents as people who very likely battle with their own heartbreaks, who battle with their own different types of pressures and fears and insecurities that can battle loneliness, all of which, those things, when you actually pause to consider it, they all filter into our own interactions with them. But many times we don't pay attention to that. I shared this at our parenting conference that we had hosted last weekend, but often I find myself talking to high school students from time to time that are juniors and seniors, and they're preparing to head off to college, and inevitably I run into a few who are struggling with their parents during this season. And many times it tends to be with mom, where I hear the same kind of story where, you know, mom's just being way too emotional right now. Mom's overreacting to too many things. And they're like, I'm 17, I'm 18 years old, and mom's treating me like a kid, and it's driving me crazy. And there ends up being this huge strain on the relationship. And as it plays out, there's very little, if any, honor that's being shown. And so each time I find myself having the very same conversation where I look at the student and I say, okay, here, I want you to understand, this isn't everybody's story, but I'm sure that there's some elements of this that are true to your story, where it's very likely that your mom spent at least the first 2 years of your life wiping your bottom, you know? You got to understand that. She made sure you were fed. She cleaned up your puke. She provided clothes for you. She drove you to soccer. She drove you to gymnastics. She drove you to ballet, to football practice. She helped you with your homework. She held your hand across the street. She helped keep a roof over your head, and on and on and on. And you need to understand, I look at these students and say, you need to understand that much of your mom's identity the last 18 years has been shaped by being your mom and by doing those types of things. And right now, your mom is feeling like all that is slipping through her fingers and walking out the door. And she's not quite sure how to handle all those emotions, because her focus is what's on being torn away from her, what's leaving her, who's leaving her. And you got to understand, she's bound to get emotional when you consider all of that context. But when you're 17, when you're 18 years old, all you're focused on is all these new things that lie ahead for you. You're focused on new independence, new experiences. You're reaching for all these new and exciting things. But understand, many times your mom is experiencing just the opposite of that. And so you need to regularly reflect on the incredibly vital role your mom has played in your life that's so easy to forget in the present. To reflect back on that, and in doing so, you've got to figure out, how do I show honor well? And even if for no other reason, and this applies to all of us, the fact that your mom and dad played an absolutely essential role in your existence, if for nothing else, that you find a reason to show them honor because of that, because without them, without your mom making the decision to carry you in her womb, you wouldn't be here. And so, this isn't about trying to get your mom to change. I keep telling them, it's not about getting your mom to change. It's about changing how you perceive your mom, how you perceive your dad, because that's where honor starts. And I find myself sharing that over and over again, because I wish that someone had shared that with me many years ago. Because I wish that I would have navigated that transition in my own life with more honor than I did. You see, the scriptures say that every person, regardless of where they were born, regardless of what they look like, regardless of what they've done or what they haven't done, what they believe, every person is created in the image of God. And that alone, the scriptures say that they bear God's image, gives them value. And God commands us, for no other reason than that alone, to show honor, to show them honor. Second principle about honor we've got to get is that honor is about what you decide, not what they deserve. Now, this is on the slide, but it's just as important, okay? Honor is about what you decide, not what they deserve, but it's also not about what you feel. So if you're taking notes, you need to write that down as well. That it's not about what you feel. It's not about what they deserve. Keep in mind, we say this many different times, God never commands feelings. So many times we have this distorted view of God that we feel like he's commanding us to feel certain ways. God doesn't command feelings. But the temptation in any moment, or for some of you, what has become moment after moment, strung together for years, the temptation is to think, well, you know what? I would honor my parents, but they're just not honorable. Consider the context of what's going on here in Exodus for a moment when God gives this fifth commandment. Okay, God is giving the laws to Moses on Mount Sinai, who then in turn he wants to pass on to the nation of Israel. And he starts with the Decalogue. He starts with the first 10, and then he starts detailing out more specifics. And this took a chunk of time. This took time for God to kind of walk Moses through all these different specifics of how these play out. Because again, understand, this entire generation of Hebrews up to this point, they knew nothing but slavery. This entire generation had grown up as slaves in an Egyptian culture that didn't value human life at all. They treated human life like a commodity that got passed around and traded and sold. And it had never been modeled for them how to live in such a way that you actually honor other people. And so God is detailing this out to Moses. But after about a month or so of waiting, Israel got tired of waiting on Moses to come back from the mountains. Look at what happens, Exodus chapter 32. It says, when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him." Aaron answered them, "Take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me." So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. He took what they handed him, made it into an idol, cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." I hope you see the irony in that. Steve and I were talking about this yesterday. It's as if God, with this fifth commandment, is saying, "Kids, I'm commanding you to honor these people." Like God, just in this, you know, metaphor picture of God placing his arm around the nation of Israel, these kids in Israel. "Kids, I'm commanding you to honor these people, these very people. They're gonna behave in all sorts of non-honorable ways. There are people that are broken, people that are confused, people that are going to prove themselves unfaithful to even the most basic and foundational commands I give them. This is a group of people that they're going to bow down and worship a golden calf. But still, I want you to honor them. Not because they deserve it. But I want you to honor them. I want you to choose to honor them. Because this is for you. This is a command, again, that comes with a promise for you. This doesn't have anything to do with what they deserve. This is about intentionally choosing, making a decision to honor." But you see, this is at the core of the way of God. When we talk about living life under the leadership of God, to living under the leadership of Jesus, this is it. That we would treat people not as they deserve. Because that's how God treats us. Romans chapter 5 says, "You see, at just the right time, while we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still confused, while we were still broken, while we were still messing things up, while we were still not all cleaned up and fixed up and getting things right, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Though we did nothing to deserve it then, and though we do nothing to deserve it now, God chooses to love us, to value us, to honor us, even when we're at our worst. And we're called to do the same for others. And especially our parents, to honor them. Now, again, I don't want to revisit everything we talked about a few months ago, but just to be clear, because I know that there's some of you, you might not even be able to hear me right now, because the question that is in your mind is, how in the world am I supposed to honor my parents? You don't know my situation. You don't know my context. You don't know the abuse and the toxicity that have come through my parents and the hurtful, deep woundings that have. And I get that. So I don't want to revisit everything we did a couple months ago. But if that's you, I want you to understand, again, there is a way to honor your parents without trusting them. That honor and trust are not the same thing. And that there is a way to honor your parents, but still put in place certain emotional and physical boundaries for yourself, and perhaps wisely even your own children someday. That honor does not exclude healthy and wise boundaries. But what we can't do, what we can't do, no matter what our situation is let our own hurts and wounds prevent us from figuring out, from doing the hard work of figuring out what it looks like to show honor, to live lives as we've been called to live. Because at the end of the day, you and I aren't going to give an account for our parents' actions. You and I aren't giving an account for the lack thereof of our parents' actions. But what we will give an account for is how we honored our parents. That's what we're called to do, how we honor our parents. See, whether you realize it or not, your heart toward your parents, your decision to honor your parents may be one of the greatest indicators of your spiritual maturity. That it's not something that you can shelve off and say, "Well, you know what? I treat other people great. You know, and yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm doing this with God and church, and I got this, I'm not making idols, I'm not doing this, and then I got all these other people down. And then I'm not, but I, not me, not this one. I don't want to honor mom and dad because of my situation, my excuse, and I've got all these different reasons of why I don't. It's much, much easier so many times to focus on all these other people than to actually do the hard work of figuring out what's it look like to love people in my own home. What's it look like to love people in my own particular family and to figure out what it looks like to show them honor. Last principle I want to share with you is this. Rather than demanding honor, that we seek to live honorably. Rather than demanding honor, that we seek to live honorably. Look at Ephesians chapter 6. Paul is reflecting back and he quotes the Decalogue. He quotes this fifth commandment when he says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Then he says this, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. You see, there's a calling on both parents and kids to live lives that demonstrate and show honor. That many times there's this mistaken idea that in a parent-child relationship, honor is only supposed to flow one way, and that's up. But as parents, an easy trap we have to understand that we can fall into is one where we can find ourselves demanding honor and respect without giving our kids the same. Where we can find ourselves being more often critical of their faults than we find ourselves speaking to their potential. And where we can find ourselves more often focusing on demonstrating our authority by demanding honor and obedience rather than focusing on demonstrating honor ourselves, demonstrating our trustworthiness ourselves to them. You see, it becomes real easy as a parent to kind of use this fifth commandment as a bully club that we feel like God has entitled to us. And so our reaction to our kids is, how dare you not show me honor? How dare you not show me respect? And so we come with this kind of attitude and we say, don't you understand what the fifth commandment says? You owe me this. What we have to understand is that the fifth commandment is not for parents. It's for kids. That the honoring is not for you as parents. It's for them. They have a heart that would learn to honor, and that it comes with a promise that this affects how they live. It affects how they their quality of life, how they treat other people, and that whole deal that comes along with that. Every aspect of their life is affected by that. But it's not given to you as this bully club to demand from your kids. And understand, choosing not to exasperate them and bringing them up, as Paul says, in the training and instruction of the Lord, is bringing them up in an environment where the way of Jesus is being lived out in all directions. At the most foundation of what Jesus taught on, of how we treat each other, is what he says in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. He says, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. And when he says in everything, that includes how we treat and honor our parents. But it also includes how we treat and honor our kids. It says, in everything, that we would treat them the way that we want to be treated. And as basic as that sounds, sometimes we can parent with the assumption that that truth, that reality doesn't apply to us as parents. That I'm supposed to treat other people, everyone else, the way that I want to be treated. But that when it comes to our kids, I don't, that's different. I don't treat them the way that I want to be treated. I'm supposed to do something else to them. Now, again, that's not saying that you don't discipline or you don't correct. There is a way to discipline with honor. Because none of us want to live our lives without ever being corrected, without ever being disciplined. That just leads to chaos and all sorts of foolishness. And so we want that. But what we do want is to be disciplined in such a way that it also isn't demeaning, that it also isn't shaming. There's a way to discipline and correct with honor. Because, again, that's how we want to get treated. See, this is about trusting and following Jesus. This is about trusting Jesus in how we speak and how we act to everyone and everything, and recognizing that many times, get this, the level of value you receive is determined by the amount of honor you choose to give. That many times, the level of value you receive is determined by the amount of honor you choose to give. Because in a life that's submitted to God, honor flows in all directions. So as we wrap this up, I want to offer you a few more handles on how honor plays itself out, especially in certain cases when you find it hard to, because most of us don't need help when it's easy to honor our parents. You know, we don't need kind of practical advice and some tools and handles on how to navigate those situations. Most of us, it's when it's hard to. And so yesterday I wanted to jot some things down. This is kind of shotgun approach to you, and so I'm hoping that they're helpful, but I just wanted to write down, here's some last thoughts that if I've got the last 10%, I want to try to give you some handles. Here it is. To speak with honor to your parents' face and then use them as a punchline behind their backs, you need to understand that's not honor. Just because they might be in another room, or they might be back home while you're at school, or they may be in another house, they may be in another state when you go back to the office and you talk about them, or you go with your friends. To speak with honor to their face and then dishonor them behind their backs is not honor. To give honor to your parents, regardless of what they've done or haven't done, to give honor, at the very least, what you can do is you can be kind and civil in your dealings with them. Again, in instances of abuse and toxicity, that doesn't mean having to trust them. It doesn't mean having to put yourself in harm's way over and over again. God's not asking you to be naive or foolish. But you can still be kind. You can still be civil in your interactions with them. You can be respectful. You can show honor. As an adult, and you're trying to figure out how to show honor to your parents now as an adult yourself, honoring your parents can be done by letting them know and demonstrating that you are, in fact, listening to them and that you're considering what they have to say. Even though you may not actually do what they say or follow through on what they're saying, honor can be demonstrated by intently listening and letting them know that you are going to consider what it is that they have to say. Some of you may be in a situation where your parents never seem to speak kindly to you. In fact, you can't ever remember a time when a parent has said, "I love you." You can't ever remember a time when your parents said, "I'm proud of you." You can't remember a single time when someone said, "I'm sorry," or they even offered you a thank you. You can't remember that your whole life, and something in you keeps waiting around to hear it. And when you don't hear it year after year after year, you get more and more angry, and you get more and more disappointed, and you get more and more bitter. Understand, for you, the first step in you honoring your parents may be letting go of these unrealistic expectations that you've placed on them. After all, if this has been their pattern their whole life of communication with you, to privately hold on to these demands that they say certain things to you, all that it is doing is consuming you with this constant disappointment and heartache and preventing you from honoring them. And so perhaps the first step for you is just letting that go, of putting down those demands. It doesn't mean that you can't hope for it someday, that you can't give that to God and say, "God, this would be awesome someday if my parents could say this to me, but I'm not going to privately demand it anymore. I'm not going to privately expect it and get consumed with this disappointment. I will be pleasantly surprised if it ever happens and be grateful for the gift if it comes." You know, when you're younger, honor is more typically expressed to your parents as obedience. You need to understand that. As you're younger, honor is typically shown as obedience. But as you get older, as you move into adulthood, and as your parents get older, honor is more often demonstrated and received by care, by giving your attention, by being present. Another thing when we think about honor is that we have to be willing to take the time to stop and think, what is driving me to continue to show dishonor? What is the impulse in me that keeps driving me to dishonor my parents? That we'd stop and pause and really wrestle with that we would think deeply about that we consider, is it this revenge in me? Is that my heart? Is that what keeps that I want to just keep kind of acting out in this revenge on them? Is that what fuels this dishonor? Is it to solicit pity from other people? Is that why when I'm talking to other people and I'm dishonoring my parents, is it because I'm trying to solicit pity What is it? What is the impulse that keeps driving you to dishonor? If you struggle with that, you need to stop and ask, what is that? What is that in me? And then lastly, I was thinking about this in the shower this morning, and I was like, oh, that's, I can't leave that out because this is too important. It's that you would never use the phrase, don't take this personally, and then follow up with some dishonoring statement after that. Whenever you lead into a phrase, don't take this personally, you're about to dishonor someone. So you just need to remove that phrase from your vocabulary wheelhouse, all right? Here's my final challenge to all of us. You see, because honor has become so lost in our culture and we don't know how to find it, if you want to see honor displayed, if you want to see it displayed, the best place you can go is a funeral. You ever notice that? Doesn't matter what someone did, what someone didn't do. Doesn't matter what they ever said, what they deserved, what they didn't deserve. People, time and time again, when it comes to a funeral, they find a way to show honor. They find a way to show respect. And so my hope is, my challenge is that we'd be a community of people that would not shy away from the hard work of figuring out what it looks like to show honor to people long before the funeral happens. And very specifically, that we'd figure out a way with all the different variables and all the different tensions, that we'd figure out a way to show honor to our parents. Again, not because they deserve it, but because it would seem that God believes that if we can get that right, that it will lead us into life. And that loving other people and all sorts of other people in our life will naturally begin to flow out of that. So let's pray. Father, thank you for a much needed reminder. I know for myself, and I'm sure for all of us. And I pray that you would give us the courage to do the hard work of figuring out what it looks like to honor. I pray that you would help make us vulnerable with one another and humble with one another, that we would ask for help from each other on how do we do this. So we just confess our emotions so often can get in the way and can cause all sorts of excuses. And so I pray that we would link arms together in this and we would trust you to lead us into life. We love you and thank you. In the name of Jesus, amen. Thanks, friends. See you next week.